Welcome to the Domestic Abuse Breakthrough Show, where we tackle violence against women and girls through education, empowerment, and hope. Join Kate, a survivor and advocate, as she shares insights, strategies, and stories that inspire healing and action. Together, we'll break the cycle and pave the way for a future of safety and strength. This show contains a trigger warning. And now, here's your host, Kate Beasley.
So welcome back to another episode. And today I am joined by Robert Kayser. Welcome.
Welcome. A wonderful good morning to you.
Now, this is our second attempt at recording this episode.
Yes.
We have gone through this conversation already before, and I realised at the end I wasn't recording.
Let's hope it will be as good as the first edition, the unrecorded one.
So we're just having a chat about, well, first of all, before we get started, do you want to tell the audience about who you are, what you do, to give them a little bit of background about you?
Yes, let's keep the story as short as possible. So my name is Robert Kayser. I'm the CEO and founder of a company called PPSS Group, based in North Yorkshire, or West Yorkshire, actually. But also the last 30 years, I've been sort of dedicated my life to listening and working with primarily female survivors of both sexual and physical violence. I've conversations with certainly more than 100 survivors. And I was involved in several stories quite personally. I was in a long-term relationship with a partner who had previously been sexually assaulted. So I became very, very passionate about subject matter, and ultimately, over the last few years, under the Freedom of Information Act, I requested several victim statements and witness statement and coroner's reports, and some of them more absolutely of horrific nature, especially those in relation to honor-based violence, honor-based killings. Some of the story are like literally outrageous. Then court rulings, police investigations. So ultimately, then I ended up writing a book that was published last year called Never a Victim. It's not just a book. It's 530 pages, 115,000 words, 3,000 hours of project-specific research got into it, and ultimately, everything I believe I know about the subject is in that book, and now we are here.
Yeah. So, I've been very keen to get more men like Robert on the show because, you know, we're faced with so often, you know, particularly when, you know, it is predominantly women shouting from the rooftops about these topics, and we get, but not all men. And obviously we know this, we know it's not all men, but, you know, unfortunately it requires men to call men out on their behaviours. So it's really important to get people like Robert on to talk about these topics. Now, before we started recording, we were just having a chat about, and obviously everybody is shouting and talking about the series Adolescence. And, you know, when we always talk about, you know, escalating behaviour, you know, no incidences come out of nowhere. Nobody wakes up one morning and suddenly decides to take somebody's life or sexually assault, rape or abuse somebody. That it doesn't happen like that. It's always escalating behaviour. And, you know, although, you know, Robert hasn't seen Adolescence just yet,
it's on my watch list. It's top on of priority. List, but it will start today or tomorrow.
He doesn't need to see it to actually know what's behind it, because you know, all cases follow a particular MO. I mean, there's many cases that I look at and I call it every time, that I guarantee you that there is, there'll be a paper trail of behavior, particularly obviously the youth of the rising youth offending at the moment, and incidences. I call it every time that I guarantee there's a paper trail of behaviors that have gone unchecked, and it resulted in what we're seeing today.
Well, one was interesting actually. A few years back, I was doing some serious in-depth research on, I'm not getting sidetracked, but on the worst mass murderers in the last several decades. I don't talk about people like Adolf Hitler or Stalin or whatever. We talk individuals who literally men who have killed women or children or whatever, and who committed the most horrific crimes. And the research project was about finding commonalities between all those perpetrators. And the literally MRIs guns got involved, blood samples got involved to see if there's anything physically, biologically, chemically, or they have in common. And there's nothing. But the top 100 worst male perpetrators of the last years have only one single thing in common, and they've all lost the love of the mother. So either they were neglected by the mother was a drug addict, the mother has given them up, the mother has beaten them, assaulted them sexually, physically, whatever it's going to be, or threatened them. So that's a very good starting point of any conversation to understand, okay, what does it make a boy become ultimately a good man? And what does it take for a boy to become a horrific perpetrator, like in the film you just and the Netflix series you just referred to? And as we both know, there are several things that can prevent a young boy from becoming a bad person. I genuinely believe it. And there are several things, if overlooked, can be partly responsible for a young man becoming a very, very bad man, you know?
Yeah, 100%. And I mean, obviously, in the I don't want to spoil it for you, but they were very much, when the psychologist was trying to get to the bottom of what was influencing his views on women, girls, relationships, what it means to be a man. She was doing so by trying to get an understanding of what his relationship was like with his dad, his granddad. What were they like as people? And what was very, very obvious to me was how defensive and protective he was of his dad, and anything he may have done wrong. But he was obviously very, very much seeking his dad's approval all the time and not getting it. Seeking his dad's protection and again not getting it. And even when he was asked who he wanted his responsible adult to be in with him when he was being interviewed, he chose his dad. He was always desperately seeking this
Approval.
validation, approval, protection of the man who had failed him, essentially. And that's, as you just highlighted, it is does root back to, and this is where people confuse childhood trauma. They think childhood trauma is growing up in a war zone, being exposed directly to domestic, severe domestic abuse in the home, being abused as a child, physically abused as a child, or sexually abused as a child. That's what they, or or parents having addiction problems, that's what they associate it with. And it's not always the case. It can literally be an emotional disconnect because mum and dad are busy with their own lives, and they have no emotional space left for their children, and that is it in a nutshell.
Yeah,
So
I moved a few years here back to Italy 4 years ago now with my wife and dogs and cats and got another set of God knows what have you. So we live here for 4 years, and it's quite interesting understanding how the Italian community or think about family and how they engage and the value, the worth of family, the family sense they have. And my wife and me, well, we do sort of religiously, not a specific day, but once a month we sort of would go on a date night to make sure this relationship remains intact, whatever you call it, so it doesn't become too monotone. And we said that recently, that the 4 years living here and going out and for dinners, whatever, that we have never, not even one single time in 4 years' time, sat in a restaurant with and seen families with children, and we have not seen yet one single technical device yet. So even at 10, 11 o'clock, you see parents and grandparents going out with the children, and they are very young. But they're always engaging with them. They're part of the conversation, grandma's looking after the kids, or the mom is after the kids, or dad, or whoever, but they're always part of the family. And it's really interesting when you sort of go to other countries sometimes where it doesn't matter, it's such young age, just to keep them quiet, they'd be given a technical device to entertain themselves. And this is not, I'm not going to be all anti-technology, whatever, but I thought, if you do that, at least I've got a reasonable understanding of what they are watching. I mean, it's a difference between watching games or being subjected to misogynistic kind of extremism kind of views. You know what I mean, and maybe had an early conversation about that. We know that social media now is feeding the young man with content provided by individuals such as Andrew Tate, for example, and you're right what you said. There's no question about it. That's proven over and over and over again that any young man, any boy, who has been witnessing domestic abuse on a regular basis or has been exposed to sexual or physical violence themselves, are way more likely to become perpetrators themselves. But even those who have not, nevertheless, if they are 10 years old and start watching on a regular basis videos, you know, I mean, created by Tate or by the Tate brothers or anyone else for that matter, and then they create a small community with their little friends where they're discussing these videos and thinking it's great. And every time a new video is being produced, it's a high five moment. That you, at that time, that boy, without any questions, already on the wrong track in their lives, aren't they? And the probability of them becoming loving boyfriends at the age of 16, for example, is very, very low, isn't it? So, and that's what I'm saying. That's where family members, say, mothers, fathers, whatever, have got a responsibility. If you're going to a restaurant and give your child a device, okay, that's I'm not going to judge anyone based on that, but at least make sure that they're not watching anything that is toxic. And that is what the problem today's society is. As you said, a lot of parents isolating themselves, and I get it. I run businesses, so I get it inside out. It's a busy. We only have got 24 hours. We've got 12 hours a day. We have to earn money. We live in a society where probably both parents have to work to pay the mortgage and cars, credit cards, whatever. I understand that, but if we don't look after our children, have a reasonable understanding of what they do, a reasonable understanding, then we expose them to extreme risk. That may well go wrong at some point in the future, you know?
I mean, there's just a recent case, and it's in line obviously with what you focus on is sexual related offences. There's three youths in Manchester that have been charged with rape of a young girl in a supermarket car park. These youths were 13, 14, and 15. And they raped this young girl. It's like, well, I mean, it's like obviously in this adolescence, it's the first thing that came to my mind is what on earth is a 13-year-old boy doing out after dark, and your pa and his parents don't know where he is? I mean.
Well, then, even if they do know, the question is, do they care? That it goes further. Well, this conversation is endless, isn't it? I mean, how many parents actually really know where the child are, where the children are? When I was young, I played football, whatever I did. My parents would come back at 7 o'clock, and if I wasn't back at 7 o'clock, that had a consequence of whatever nature, you know. I would have not come home at 11 o'clock. But I think we're living in society, and that again goes back to like what I just said about technical devices. if parents don't care about where the children are, or if parents don't care when the children come back, or if parents have got no time to deal with this type of information, that things would go wrong, you know?
I mean, I
If
don't think
it,
it's always a case of that they don't care. I think that it's a case of, well, then my kids aren't listening to me. What am I supposed to do? I'm juggling all these balls myself. Maybe one parent works nights and
yeah.
not in to monitor it. And they, that's just how their work hours go. But, unfortunately, we all have demands of life. And if anybody knows it well, I know it well as being a sole parent, and I've got no help with my daughter at all. So I understand how hard it is.
Yeah.
I really do. But
Yeah.
ultimately, I have to make decisions, and I have to do what I need to do whilst causing the least amount of impact, negative impact on my daughter. I
Yeah.
mean, I'm very, 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 very aware that, sometimes, if I've got a lot, I'm busy, doing content and things like that, and I want to get it done. I know I can zone out. I know I can, but I've got awareness of it, so I don't allow it to slip too long because if I did, I'm just completely disconnected all the time to my daughter, and that's no good for her. So I can be guilty of doing what other parents do on autopilot all the time, but without awareness, we can't pull ourselves back.
But you've got the self awareness to realize that you need to take stock sometimes. Thank you. How much time have I spent today or yesterday or this week with my child? You know, and if you don't take stock, if you don't have the self awareness, if you let it slide, it's usually a consequence. Someone will take over that influence. You know, as a parent, yeah, it doesn't matter how time limited we are, and I really, really, really appreciate parents who work extremely hard to provide. It's a good thing. But now we need to have a self-awareness thing and thinking, well, if we don't influence our children, someone else will. You know, and then we're at the mercy of who is that person. You know what I mean?
I mean, I am acutely aware. My daughter's not in mainstream school, and I would fight tooth and nail to make sure she does not go back into mainstream school, because I know that because I'm doing it all on my own, she's more vulnerable to being caught up in the wrong groups, being targeted, and it's a slippery slope from there. I know that. So is it harder for me homeschooling? Absolutely, it is. But the alternative doesn't even bear thinking of. I mean, obviously, as we say, knowledge is power, but sometimes it can be your worst nightmare as well, can't it? The more we know, and the more we understand on the problems in the world today, it's very challenging for us to deal with as well, because we're not blind to it. We are very awake to it.
But I think it's part of our responsibility as a parent to be aware of all the risks and all that society or the world throws at us, and to ring fence our children not off to reasonable level to protect them as much as we can. You know what I mean? And to make them. But I think it's partly about educating our children as well. You know, it's about, you know, and make them. I think today's society, there's hardly any age too young anymore where we can't talk up to our children saying, this is right, this is wrong. You know, I mean, if you've got a boy, I mean, there's no, you could have a boy 12 years old. There's nothing wrong with talking to them. I did anyway with my son. He's 36, it turned out into a real superstar. But telling our boys that what it means to be a good partner, a good boyfriend, be respectful towards women, what does it mean to be a gentleman? I mean, there's nothing wrong with masculinity, but there's a serious issue with toxic masculinity or this kind of thing. And it's important that we speak to our daughters almost again, what it almost regardless what age, to help them understand, you know, that a no means no. No, what does mean, what coercive control means. You know what I mean? It's us, we don't have to wait until they start dating for them to realize what coercive control is. So there are so many things we can teach our daughters now, so they feel that we empower them. I think knowledge is power. The more knowledge you provide them at a young age, what is right and what is wrong, what is accepted, what is not acceptable, what are warning signs, what are alarming signs, what are red flags in any relationship of any age. And the more they have knowledge of that, the greater power they have, and the more empowered they are, the wider choices they will make in the future. We believe that.
Definitely age appropriate, and it should be reinforced every single, I mean, if this was taught in schools, which I believe it should be reinforced every academic year at an age appropriate level.
It's just the age appropriate. It's a really interesting point, isn't it? I mean, how do you figure out what age appropriate is? Look, as you said, mentioned early on, you've got a rape case and whatever in the region where you live, in the age of 13. A friend of mine who just became a director in my company, he was working in a custodial service and a prison service for 30 years, became a consultant. He was just acting as a consultant for one of the high secure young offender institutions in the UK, with majority of them being in there for murder, the youngest being 12 years old. So what is the, I mean, if you, so if you talk about, that's only two boys we are referring to, be 12, 13 years old. If somebody would have told us it's age appropriate to speak about to a boy in the age of 12, then we are nuts. But society has shown us now that boys at the age of 13 are raping, so clearly we need to have this discussion before them. So the age of us having to have this discussion with them is dropping literally every year at the moment. They're getting younger and younger. I mean, the willingness to commit violence, the willingness to believe misogynistic extremism and being influenced is so young now that we have to, as a parent or as society, we have to stop thinking they are too young to talk about it, or the young too young to have this conversation, or rather have this conversation a little bit younger, not in a scary way, not in a frightening way, but in an empowering and inspiring way, you know?
I mean, I think certainly, I mean, as the biggest problem here that we have is with the way we have children are so young committing offences like murder is because boundaries are not enforced. You're very young enough, or at all. There's too much, and again, I'm like a broken record on this one, but the reality is, people use mental health conditions like ADHD and autism as a get out of jail card, as, oh, it's not their fault. Well, at the end of the day, denial doesn't avoid fatalities from occurring. A denial just contributes to the escalation in behavior and the inevitability of that happening in the first place. So, we have to, as a nation, we have to stop using mental health as a get out of jail card. And it starts from a very, very young age. We have to stop, this thing about, oh, but they don't understand. Well, if they are a danger and you're saying they lack capacity, well, then they shouldn't be mixing freely among society where they're putting others in danger. That's the reality.
True.
So it doesn't matter which way you put it, we have to contain it because there's people losing their lives. Children are losing their lives. Children are going to school not feeling safe anymore. And this has to stop. It has to stop. And the only way we stop it is to enforce boundaries and remove excuses for dangerous and escalating behavior and when they are young.
No, I agree. Man, I did obviously did a lot of research in the last few years about the severity of violence, especially violence against women. And if you think in the UK or England or Wales only, when the figures by the Office of National Statistics indicate there are 1.4 million domestic violence incidents against women every year, you meant that. The statistics say there are around 800,000, just short of 800,000 rapes is acts of serious sexual violence against women every year in England or Wales alone. And the interesting part is that of all those perpetrators who are committing and are found guilty of severe, serious sexual acts of violence, 98% of men are male. 98%, you know, that tells about the importance to do something about that, you know. And it's really interesting. I completely changing the subject a bit, but due to all the research, I really sort of figured out that I think one of the messages I always try to get a point get across is that we have to remove ourselves from the idea that women need to adapt. You know, that it's not about women have to wear different clothing, or women should be flirting less, or women should be drinking less, or women should be uploading personal safety apps. Yes, I'm not saying some of them is right or wrong. Personal safety apps are a good thing, but it shouldn't be necessary to have personal safety apps. It can't be the woman's responsibility. The responsibility has to lay with men. The fact that they are responsible for 98% of all serious sexual offences in the country, that tells us exactly who we need to address and who needs changing here, you know?
We're just going to break for a short interval, and we'll see you after the break.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Apples and pears, beef and skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, aunt and deck, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com.
Strawberries and cream. A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
The station that makes you feel good.
So welcome back. So obviously we've delved quite a bit into the, what's behind escalating behaviour. But what can women do to keep themselves safe, Robert?
Well, obviously, that's when you start writing a book and end up with 530 pages or 115,000 words. I mean, how do you wrap that up in literally a very few minutes? And the two things, without any doubt about it, the most powerful advice I can give, each would have one word. One is awareness. Second will be intuition. Let's start with the intuition very briefly. So, we all are equipped with this kind of, and it's not magic at all, but something in your body that is literally is associated to your subconsciousness, which is your good feeling, your instinct, your intuition. And especially women, bless them, have got this kind of intuition that is hardwired in them. It's an innate ability. And it's not coincidence, it's not magic, it's just an algorithm of thousands of pieces of information. Everything you've experienced, everything you've seen, everything you've smelled, sensed, read, watched on TV, anything you've touched, anything in the past, when you're entering environment and suddenly your hair starts standing up in a way, it just, within a high-speed train, all the information become present in your head, and that will tell you something isn't right. The problem we have with that today's society, the problem women have today in today's society, is that many don't listen to the intuition. And I understand that. And the reason for that is because many women grew up in a world, in a society where they have been told to be kind, to be respectful, not to cause a scene, not to make a drama, not upset people. No, many women have been told intuition is just a made-up thing that based on, I don't know, nonsense. Now, don't trust it. Many women have been told just to rely on facts and figures and numbers, and that is a point where a lot of women are saying, okay, they ignore the intuition. So there are so many stories during my research when I wrote my book that are really, really interesting, where women. Many survivors of sexual and physical violence have said that something told them prior to the abuse, prior to the assault, prior to the incident, that their gut feeling told them something wasn't right, but they have did listen to it. I mean, in fact, there's a woman actually who wrote a poem, a book about it. It's literally, she was in an apartment, someone knocked on the door, she opened the door, a man or whatever kind of person was talking to her, and she said her immediate intuition said, I don't like him. But she said, I can't be rude because we women, we shouldn't be rude. And the result ultimately was that she was sexually assaulted. I show you so many examples in this book about that. So to answer your question, again, it's power, knowledge is power. And I can only empower women to say, ignore what other people tell you. Trust your intuition. Your intuition will never, ever get you into trouble. That your intuition just doesn't work. It will never, it's absolutely impossible. Your intuition will always have your safety, your well-being at heart. It will rather make sure that you overreact and get into safety rather than pushing you into unnecessary risk. So the answer question is listen to what your good feeling is telling you know?
And that's something I can relate to 100%. And it is, I describe it as it's this, oh, ominous, gut-wrenching, oh my God, something bad's going to happen feeling. You fob it off and dismiss it as, oh, I'm suffering with anxiety, or there's something wrong with me. Some people may even position it as, oh, it's my ADHD or it's my autism or something. No, it is your, it is. We have internal alarm systems that operate at a rapid rate. They scan our surroundings at a rapid rate. And they have detected something before your critical thinking brain has come online. It could be something really subtle, like a a look, a tone, the way they're carrying their body.
Absolutely.
This is the primal response that we are responding to. Now we always worry as women, what if, what if I'm wrong? What if I'm, what if it, this is me? What if it is? I am the problem. And we worry about that. And I, like I say, I experienced that with my ex-husband. And I ignored it. I ignored it, and my gut was right. It was bang on. It's much better to feel embarrassed. And, in certain situations, you don't have to see that person ever again if you don't want to. There are ways to avoid people.
But the example I also have used, one of the standard examples is that when you start living in an apartment complex and you're on the base level and the lift comes down, the lift opens up, and there's a man standing in the lift, and your good feeling, as you've already said, it could be a lack of smile, it could be a smile, it could be the facial expression, it could be the smell, it could be the gesture, it could be the clothing. It doesn't matter what it is. The fact is completely irrelevant to what it is. The moment you feel like something isn't right, it's even if you can't pinpoint, it's absolutely not absolutely irrelevant. The moment you feel something isn't right, you gotta listen to it. But the point is, the majority of women would rather not make that man feel
Not
uncomfortable, think,
offend,
okay, now I'm not gonna go into lift because I don't like it. The vast majority of women wouldn't do it. They would rather go into the lift and not make it feel uncomfortable. So what I'm saying is, so the majority of women would rather go into a soundproof steel box with a person they just decided they don't like, rather than waiting, i.e. 1 minute and 10 seconds for the next lift. And that is a society we have sort of created now, where women feel they should. It's a societal pressure. It's, you know what I mean, where they feel like they shouldn't upset anyone, they shouldn't cause a scene, they shouldn't make a drama, they should comply and obey, whatever you want to call it. And that is where I always say, don't, you know, just listen, do what you think is right. It's the same at the workplace. You know, I have so many conversations recently with women who sort of talk to me about sexual harassment, serious sexual harassment actually at work, you know. And it's like, and I was like, now what, they ask me about what you do, and I said, well, what I would not do, A, let it slide. That's a given. What I would even not do is saying, hey, Thomas, have you got a minute outside in private? Can I speak to you? Because that is just ways of, no, I would just cross the scene. I would literally stand up in the middle of the office and say, Thomas, I really don't like the way you conduct yourself to me, towards me. I don't like your joke, and your language is offensive. And if you do say it loud in front of everyone, and you embarrass him, the probability of him doing again is very, very little. Where if you take him out in private, or very quietly, with all the courtesy in the world, say, Thomas, I really don't like it, the probability that you will do it a day later to another female co-worker is very high. So you'd rather get the hammer out and stop it right then and there. You know what I mean? That's what I think sometimes, and I am a man, to be honest, you know, I should be saying it really, but sometimes we may need to be said something very, very clear and black and white, and not saying, well, it's sort of indicate it's negotiable, maybe another time, depending if it's more convenient. Sometimes a really loud and clear no is what men do understand the best. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah. We're just going to break for another interval, and we'll see you after the break.
The station that makes you feel good.
If optimizing your health and well-being is on your to-do list, then let Revive Active, Ireland's number one super supplement brand, help you achieve that in the most convenient and comprehensive way possible. Clean, premium ingredients scientifically formulated to work in synergy to support immunity, energy, joints, heart health, sleep, emotional balance, and more. Benefit from the power, purity and positivity of our award-winning powder sachets or our therapeutic capsule range. Use code RADIO15 at reviveactive.com and save 15% off today. Super supplements for a super you.
When you vacation with Norwegian Cruise Line, every day is a new day. Get a taste for Barcelona, then savor incredible dining options back on board one day. Connect to ancient history in Athens, and then disconnect completely in our spa another day. Wherever the sea breeze takes you, come aboard and experience a different tomorrow with NCL. Visit ncl.com, call your travel agent, or call 0333-336-1472. Norwegian Cruise Line, Ships Registry, the Bahamas and USA.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
So welcome back. So we were just chatting in the break about how there's a lot of double standards that go on with men and boys, you know, and, you know, particularly around women and girls feel that they need to use their body and sexualize themselves to attract and be interested to boys, be of interest to boys and men. And men and boys encourage it. But when it happens, it can also, they can also shame them for it. And it happens so often, so often. And this is where you often find, you know, if we're doing any risk assessment, and we ask the question, has there been any sexual coercion? Have they made you do things that you feel uncomfortable about? There's a lot of shame involved there, and they are not willing to disclose it.
Yeah. This is, I think, where last year's case with Gisela Pellico was really I think it was one of the most powerful stories I've been part of this. And I've been involved in women's safety and violence against women for the last 3 decades. And Gisele Pellico said, the shame must change side. The shame must change side from the victim survivor to the perpetrator. And that is really important now, you know. And I think the media, I think on different platforms are changing quite a bit. You know, where I can remember 10 years of many conversations in the newspapers or even TV where women were still blamed, directly blamed or indirectly for, look what she was wearing, or no, clearly she drank so much, or no, she's been flirting so much, she must have seen the coming type of thing. Well, things are very different now, I feel. I think the media are now more supportive now towards victim survivors, saying, hang on, let's highlight the story, but not in a victim survivor aggressive way, but more actually in a protective way, saying it's a shame that we need to change side. And I think it's really important for men as well to understand that. Yeah, I did a conference in Middlesbrough last week. I was speaking at a conference, and I said it's men who have to realize that it's a man who rapes a woman who needs to be shamed.
Yeah.
It's a man who beats up his wife unconscious who needs to be shamed. It's a man who goes to a nightclub or to a festival with the intention of spiking a woman's drink. He needs to be shamed.
Yeah.
Not the women's or the female survivor who survives that. So I hope that the more women sharing their experiences and telling their story, it's a domino effect. I really believe that it will empower and inspire more women to share their story. And again, by doing so, helping others, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think the closing message here is that, you know, women shouldn't need to conform to keep themselves safe or conform to please a man. Women generally tend to walk on eggshells all the time. They are damned if they do and they are damned if they don't. If they don't behave in a sexual promiscuous way, then they are deemed as men are not interested in them. And if they do, then they're open for criticism as well. But equally, when they do, certain groups of men, that's what they want, that's what they're seeking. Yeah. But they will weaponize it against the woman if it suits them. And you know, this needs to change. You know, it's, you know, and you know, women need to speak out. We have to speak loudly about when this behavior is happening. There's no shame involved in it at all.
I think women need to make a stand and share. I think need to share their story, their experiences, to empower others.
Yeah.
Because the moment you start sharing your experience, that's when the healing process begins. Anyone I know with the military or law enforcement who's been diagnosed with PTSD will echo that the moment they share the story to a therapist, to a psychologist, to a whatever it is, that's when your healing begins.
Yeah. You know?
And I think for a woman, after having experienced sexual or physical violence or sexual harassment in any way, to start the healing, it's absolutely essential, because otherwise you can't be unhappy forever. You need to see the light at the end of the tunnel at some point. And the only way you step out of the darkness and into the light is by talking about it and start healing and recovering, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And of course, you know, speaking out, you know, could save somebody else's life at the end of the day.
Absolutely.
And I know there's been a recent incident in South Wales that my friend, who is a therapist, actually knows the perpetrator's ex-partner, who he has children with. Essentially, he has killed his current partner. He's referring to it as sex gone wrong. Basically, it was non-fatal strangulation. The ex-partner, the mother to his children, is feeling immense guilt because she didn't speak out.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's not her fault, because, you know, that's what society's taught many, many women, is you know, if I speak out about this, people are going to form opinions on me. I see it all the time when I'm engaging with victims that what they tell me, but they is one thing, but they will make it very clear I don't feel comfortable communicating that to the police. They will tell me that because they're fearful of being judged. The closing message here is there's no shame in it. There's no shame whatsoever.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you are not to blame. It is the perpetrator's
It
blame.
doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how much you drink or what you dress or how you conduct yourself. The word consent is clear. You know what I mean? Even during sexual intercourse, at any point, however way, whatever it is, you feel like, no, you feel uncomfortable either with the type of sex or the timing of it or whatever it is, and you say no, that is game over straight away. You know what I mean?
100%.
And I think and the woman shouldn't say, well, there should be no shame at all. And I completely agree with it, you know, wholeheartedly. But it's very difficult to get the message across, you know.
So the
It
minute
is
you say
maybe.
no, that's and the other party, pushes and presses, you, then that's where the line's crossed,
It's black and white.
and
It's
it's entering into a sexual related offence then.
But the law, UK law, is pretty black and white. But it's about educating females. Not many women understand what consent means. So if
No.
you're mentally ill, for example, you can't give consent. If you're underage, you can't give consent. If you're intoxicated, you can't give consent. But even, for example, if the man or the person you're dealing with is of a great of a person of authority or power, like is a junior employee versus a managing director, or you know, I mean, anything like this, or a student or a teacher.
It's
If
grooming.
there's an imbalance, yeah, if there's an imbalance of power, then again, consent cannot be given, you know?
100%. Well, thank you, Robert. It's been great having you
Well,
on.
thank you for having me. Yeah, I appreciate it.
And thank you for listening. See you on the next episode.
Thank you for tuning in and being part of this vital conversation. If you feel inspired to take action and support women, girls, and children affected by abuse, please visit the show notes in Kate's bio on UK Health Radio. There, you can register your interest in becoming a certified trauma-informed expert, specializing in topics that address this ever-growing crisis. Together, we can shape a safer future for those who need it most. Until next time, stay strong, stay informed, and remember, you are never alone.